Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Jonathan.
And this week, we've watched Lonely Among Us. And now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit Star Trek.
Listen, I had a great time. There's Gorn wannabes, there's the ugliest aliens I've ever seen in my life, and there's Sherlock there's Data being Sherlock, so this was a win for me.
Okay? Yeah, Sherlock Data's fun. Sherlock, I mean, I am going to presage this with
Why?
Because there's a lot to talk about in the sense of the first season of TNG having no idea what it's doing with itself.
It's classic. There's an ominous cloud. That's basically 50% of a good Star Trek episode.
you turn on the Star Trek as an ominous cloud, you're like, yeah. I mean, even with Strange New Worlds, it was like, episode 3, ominous cloud, we're in for a good one.
That's how you preserve the true vision. So
they an ominous they cloud could. Or a weird energy dart moving around the screen because they can't afford to build a ship model. Which we didn't get this week, which is in Lonely Among Us. But we did get, as we say, you know, Data. Miles O'Brien's there for a bit.
Didn't notice him. So sorry to you.
Okay, the podcast over. I'm quitting.
So. I saw your tweet and I was like, oh, he was there. Cool.
Most important man in Starfleet.
Most important man in Starfleet. And it's a good episode. I mean, why did you pick it? Because you didn't like it? Did you pick it because I said, I want more season one of TNG? Because I don't mind either.
I picked it more because, yeah, it's a season one TNG episode, and those tend to be forgotten or ignored by the fans. I will give it points in the makeup and soundtrack departments. Ron Jones was the composer of this episode, and he definitely had a distinctive style to his compositions that, as much as I respect Dennis McCarthy and Jay Chataway for the sheer amount of music they put out for Star Trek between 87 and 2005. Ron Jones just has a very distinctive style that you definitely get in this episode. And yeah. Michael Westmore's makeup is on point. Like, yeah, the Antikins aren't that good to look at, but you can definitely appreciate the quality and craftsmanship that went into the Anakin and the Sele masks.
Are the Antikins the owl, the dog wolf ones. People? Yeah. Okay, wow, completely different animals. Owl, wolf, people, dog. Yeah, that makes
sense. Assholes.
Yeah, the jerks.
I loved them. Wait, I forgot what the other ones are called.
The Seleans.
Yeah, the Seleans, yeah.
But that's just because I'm biased.
Yeah, you just like reptile people. I mean,
I don't know. I either hate them
or... Yeah, Olivia likes everyone who's a reptile, you know. Gorn, Seleans.
No, Tories, I know where this is going.
Monarchy, reptile people.
Oh.
You were asking for that.
I thought you were going to say Descartes, and I was just...
No, he's a dinosaur. That's not a reptile. It's very different.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, and it's funny that they presented the Anakins and the Sele as these mortal enemies, and then there's a... I think it's in Tapestry. You can see two sharing a table in the bar at the Starbase in Picard's flashback.
Oh, it's like that's Romeo and Juliet. Cool.
And now let's get a 2,000-word fanfic, just a little preliminary thing on that, because that's beautiful.
Don't look at me.
Don't write that.
No. I've got like six different things. I have job. I have work. I have no money. Fanfic. Pay me to write fanfic, and we're going to write it.
I was completely frozen for a second there.
It's okay, you just have me complaining
about it. But I'm going to assume that you said yes to my very
request. I didn't.
He did. He did.
Thank you.
Just for that, I'm going to foist Don instead of segue, which is tell us, Jonathan, how did you get into this hellhole that we call Star Trek? How are you here? Why are you here? Whose fault is this?
I have always been here. No. I have, through my parents, specifically my dad, and one of my uncles, who I've tweeted about in the past, he passed away a few years ago, but my dad and this late uncle of mine were huge influences on my fandom. My uncle was he watched it in first run, back in the 60s. So TOS was his first love. He liked Next Generation. I don't know that he would be, yeah, he wasn't a gatekeeper. I wouldn't say he's like one of the modern gatekeepers. It's like, oh, this isn't Trek, but TOS was his first one. So that was his great love. And then, yeah, my dad got me into it. Like one of the first books I remember getting was Mr. Scott's Guide to the Enterprise by Shane Johnson. Great technical manual.
That's a good book.
Yeah, it's a great book. It snowballed from there. I've got hundreds of novels and most of the tech manuals and stuff. I keep glancing to my right because that's where all my Star Trek books are where I'm recording. I watched it all. I'm an Air Force brat, so we moved around a lot, so I didn't always have access to the show in first run. In fact, I missed the first 5 years of Voyager, not living in that market where we had
That's for the best.
A win.
Yeah, you won. Yesterday.
That was the hand of God, but anyway.
Yeah, it was yesterday. Penny had a go at me and was like, why do you hate Voyager so much? Is it this? And I was like, no, it's very simply nothing happens.
The only episode of Voyager I really enjoyed was the one where they went and met Sarah Silverman. I was just thinking about that. Great app, great vibes, and they never did it again.
Oh, that is a good one. The Future's End two-parter, yeah, that's a fantastic one.
So you sort of got into it. That's a nice story.
I got into it. I did get. I'm caught up. I've watched everything at least once in every series, and I signed up for CBS All Access like 2 months before Discovery premiered. So I've been watching. I've watched all the now Paramount Plus shows. Every week when they drop. So of the modern era shows, I love them all. Discovery, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks are probably my top three.
So was there a quitting moment in the original watching? Was there a quitting moment now? Or have you somehow managed to stumble forward without at any point going, what am I watching?
Honestly, I've never really reached a breaking point with Trek. Like I will defend Sub Rosa and Threshold in the motion picture.
Motion picture is actually good though.
Oh, I love the motion picture. Good. It's fantastic. Every version is great in its own way. There are definitely some that I don't care to ever watch again, like Code of Honor. Patterns of Force and TOS kind of miss the point, I think, a little.
Is that the Nazi?
That's the Nazi one. Yeah.
That's the Nazi episode.
Okay. We haven't got to that one yet. That'll be interesting.
I'm saving it. There's like a couple of historians I need to pester because I feel like they'd be the people who would just get the most nauseous about it.
I'm terrified. Yeah.
I mean, beyond the fact that Shatner and Nimoy were both Jewish and were wearing Nazi uniforms at one point in the episode.
It's
really, and they missed the whole point of like what motivated Nazi, the Nazi party. It wasn't power. It was racism. And they didn't take the brave step to flat out say that.
That shouldn't even have been a brave step, even for the 60s, to say Nazis are bad. It just happened, basically.
I mean, the weird thing, I will, whenever we do it, is the point about Patterns of Force is that it's pre-Inside the Third Reich. So people still think the Nazis were this hyper-efficient cult of magnetism.
Yeah,
and didn't know the reality of that. It was basically 400 drug-addled maniacs running around trying to kill each other and everyone else on the continent of Europe.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's a bad episode.
Yeah, that's, and I see a lot of people hold it up as a really good example. And I rate every episode 1 to 10 on a scale of 0 to 10, and that's one of the rare zeros I've given. So
it's an absolute zero. Yeah, but I don't think Lonely Among Us is. It's
nope.
I was surprised, number one, by how much happened in this episode. And then also by how there was never a moment of what the fuck. It was like this sort of steady level of standard issue, whack, TOS level nonsense.
Yes.
And at no point did it reach a sort of, actually, I'm just kind of confused by what the hell's going on here.
Okay, to be fair, the sort of getting Picard back at the end thing just seemed like bullshit, even for some techno-babble space Star Trek stuff. I was like, this seems like nonsense. Or maybe a precursor to Tuvix, I don't know.
Yeah, the showrunner at the time, and if you've watched the Chaos on the Bridge documentary, or if you've read about TNG's early days, it was a mess. that the showrunner at the time was like, yeah, we shouldn't have used the transporter like that so early in the series run.
Yeah. And they never bring it, it's never brought up again.
No. Nope.
It's kind of like, fine, it's obviously some extenuating circumstance. But so.
So how many versions of Picard are there? Because that was a new Picard, right?
No. That was a new body for him, I guess. Yeah.
Well, let's not play the transporter doesn't kill you game, because the answer is no, it doesn't.
I thought that's what they said at the end. They were like, he never experienced it.
Okay, yeah, technically it's his old body.
Yeah, that's
okay.
True.
Yeah, it's like it's instead of control pasting a PDF, they just pulled the old PDF out of the recycling bin on your computer mm-hmm. and printed that or something. I don't know. Anyway, the main thing they're doing this episode is they're taking two aliens, the Antikans and the Sele, to a planet called Parliament, because apparently planets are still named in the 24th century with the same imaginative minds who created drive-through towns in Central America, which are all called like Edinburgh or Croydon or something. So, you know, it's the same level of imaginative place naming, but Parliament. And they're in the nice little dress scants. I do like the dress scants.
Who's wearing the scants?
Everyone's wearing the big dress uniforms. Yeah.
Yep. The dress uniforms pretty much from 87 to 2000 to Voyager were dress scants until the TNG crew got their waistcoats in the movies.
Yeah, they get because the TNG guys get the when they because Voyager uses them.
But yeah, Voyager uses the scants.
DS9 and the films use the nice white tie ones.
Yeah. Although I think DS9 used the scants, yeah, till they switched to the First Contact uniforms.
Actually, I think, because the one where Worf gets done for war crimes, they wear scants, actually.
Yep. And when Sisko gets promoted to captain, special I think occasion. He's wearing the scant.
Yeah, remember that time Worf got done for war crimes?
I don't, but I think of it fondly.
Yeah.
That's a fun episode with the whole, you know, the cast looking down the barrel as they're giving their testimony, and Ron Canada's chewing the scenery like nobody's business.
Yeah.
As the Klingon prosecutor.
It's good fun.
Yeah.
But instead we have these delegates who are dickheads and just a bit awful because, you know, they fight over silly little things like religion and culture and economic system. Like, who cares about those?
We're so much better than them. No basis of comparison there.
I do like it's like the whenever anybody's like modern Star Trek isn't subtle or isn't delicate, it's like, no, modern Star Trek is much more like hesitant to dump a line like silly little people arguing over their economic systems.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're off to Parliament, but then there's a space cloud, and the space cloud electrocutes Worf, which I consider a good thing.
Yeah, Michael Dorn's facial expression when he gets zapped always cracks me up. That was a choice.
I was on the cloud side. I also thought, I didn't remember Worf's hair being this terrible. I don't even know how long it's like that for, but I was hoping the cloud might have zapped it into a better style. Sadly not.
Early Worf goes through, like, his head looks different every, like, four episodes. His hair looks different every four episodes. There's a whole bit in the middle of TNG where Worf's hair is just absolutely terrible.
Oh, the shoulder length bob.
Yeah, the Lord Farquaad look.
Yeah.
Oh, he was going through it. When did he get the lovely Brazilian? Because he has that with the waves at some point.
Season 6, I think, is when he gets the ponytail.
Hot. Yeah. Well done.
No, they piss around with different ponytails in season 6, and there's a season 7 one, and he stays with that all the way through to DS9.
Yep.
So he gets it eventually. But right now his hair sucks, his makeup sucks, and he doesn't even have a nice bandolier, and he's being electrocuted, and Geordi has to jump on him. And as a side note, I like early writing Geordi, where they're truly, clearly trying to give him a cocky Sulu vibe,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't settled on making him a massive fucking nerd. You know, he's calling Dr. Crusher Doc, and he's wisecracking all the time. And I prefer that Geordi to the incel.
Yeah, pre-incel stage Geordi. It's cute. It's fun.
He's vibing. He's a man.
And then Worf decides to attack everyone immediately, which if I was an entity trying, you know, sneaking aboard a ship, I probably wouldn't attack everyone immediately, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's maybe not, just not a great tactical choice.
Maybe he was just trying to escape being inside Worf.
Yeah, that's fair. Valid. Once again, I side with the cloud.
Yeah, it's... And then, so the Antikans are grumpy because they want to slaughter their own animals themselves, which is...
Oh, I forget that everyone's technically vegan. They don't mention it enough. How am I supposed to remember that?
You see, they start with this point. Between this and, like, the end of Voyager, they basically work it back at every point possible, being like, you know, the Siskos cook with fresh food, or complaining about the quality of replicated food, or having, like, Eddington the Marquis talk about how great it is to eat actual produce.
So replicated food is still tofu. It's tofu. The vegans never win.
There's a heavy implication that we cracked, like, natural food. We cracked natural meat substitutes. Yeah. And then we tried to decide to make completely artificial ones, and they sucked even more.
Gosh. Yeah. Yeah, and I wish the screenwriter, well, I don't wish the screenwriter had done this, but they made a choice in having Riker describe the replicated meat as, quote, fresh and tasty. Like, it just doesn't sound right coming out of Riker's mouth. I don't know why.
Yeah.
We should trust him. He's a chef, right?
He is a chef.
Not a good one. But, so...
Oh, yeah, and then he eats the bunny corns when they retired in a Nepenthe and Picard.
Oh, yeah.
What?
He eats, like, his daughter keeps, like, he eats, like, freshly caught meat.
Yeah.
Oh.
On a pizza.
Yeah.
Oh. Barbarians.
That just popped into my head when we were talking about the vegan food out of the replicators.
I've always... It's one of those weird things that modern Trek does sometimes, where it's like, you guys just didn't like this and thus unwilling to run with it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay, fine. I don't think it's bad. I just think it's interesting how just little energy any of you have for running with this vibe.
Yeah, they're season one, they're clearly throwing stuff at the wall to see what'll stick.
Yeah. Like Crusher's Google Glass head.
Oh, thing. Her Spock helmet.
That was fire.
Which apparently Gates McFadden requested.
What?
It was in the memory alpha trivia.
How do you request a prop like that?
Did Gates invent Google Glass? Is that what I'm being told here? How did she know?
It's what I read in the trivia for the episode, and I was blown away because I'd never read that before.
I just...
Now, Memory Alpha is not, you know, a definitive source, but I feel like that's probably some truth there.
If Memory Alpha is not a definitive source, we are in trouble. This podcast must end.
Memory Alpha is a professionally undefinitive source.
There we go.
I mean, it's not as cool as Wesley's jumpers.
Wesley's jumpers really and corduroy trousers. Loved it.
I really...
Oh, this reminds me. The Wesley discourse, if you can find it, get a copy of Will Wheaton's book, Memories of the Future. I think the plan was to cover all the seasons he worked, but he only got through the first 11 episodes of TNG. It's fantastic.
He wrote a book just about the first 11 episodes of TNG.
Yeah, from his perspective.
And it was that unbearable to him.
It was that unbearable for him.
That's upsetting.
I want to read that. You know, all I will say about Will Wheaton is I'm incredibly glad that he now has a gig as a guy whose job it is to be nauseatingly enthusiastic.
He was fantastic, because I went to Mission Chicago, and he was fantastic there. He's great in person.
We have to respect him for someone who has dealt with the Star Trek fandom for that long and for such a young age. Yay!
I feel like if we ever do an I Quit with Wesley Crusher, the natural solution is to ask Will Wheaton to do it with us and just be like...
He's, like, uncontactable. Like, he doesn't have Twitter. I'm not getting Facebook. To me, that's...
I think he does have Twitter.
His wife does Twitter.
He hasn't tweeted for, like, 10 years, because they hate...
Yeah, oh, he was on Twitter for a bit, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. He has an Instagram that he posts regularly.
But I mean, I think he gave up on Twitter. His agent. Yeah. Or we can accost him in person. Or send someone to accost him in person.
I am happy to accost any Star Trek actor in person. I want that on the record.
Even Mark Alamo?
Yes, I will reinvent the well, the Cisco moment, the Avery Brooks moment he had, the one before the Will Smith slap.
Oh, the one when Avery Brooks actually punched the lights out of Mark Allen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like accidentally on purpose.
Yeah, quite.
Was that in Waltz?
No, it's in the last, it's when they were filming.
They're filming the last episode. Yeah.
What We Left Behind, and he's fighting and he actually whacks him in the face.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah. Yeah, that's jogging my memory now. That's right.
Yeah. Ah, well, some of us get the lucky breaks, like punching Mark Alamo or getting an alien electro thing electrocuted into you, like Dr. Crusher does when she touches Worf. And then Troy appears to serve no purpose but for us to realize that Crusher's acting weird.
Yeah, even though it's she's acting so, like, Gates made such a wild swing as the possessed Crusher that it should have been obvious. We didn't need Troy to just waltz into sick bay and then waltz right back out. Like,
Wesley got it straight away because she was actually interested in what he's doing. So he was like, that's suspicious. But
it might be a union thing. It's usually a union thing.
But I was going to say, I thought Troy like had a lot to do. Well,
she does later on.
She does later on, yeah.
I was happy for her.
Yeah.
The bar is so low.
The bar is pretty low with Troy being useful. But on the bus side, Troy sort of, Crusher sort of wanders around, like talks to her son, trying to find the navigation control, goes to the bridge. Everyone's like, well, you're acting weird, but we're not going to push you on it. In typical Star Trek fashion.
Yeah.
And then the energy being yeets itself out of her into the computer, and then the ship starts to not work. And honestly, that shit, in their first year of like the Enterprise being launched, that shit stops working quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I couldn't tell if they were trying to hang a lantern on that or what.
It is like buying a phone and like after 6 weeks it stops charging properly. You're like, what? Mm. Well, remember which iPhone was it that started bending in people's pockets?
Bending?
It was so long.
iPhone 6. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the first like big smartphone and they hadn't got all the tech right.
That seems like just get some good metal. That feels like the least complicated part. But no, all I remember is when the Samsungs were exploding. So that's...
I don't remember that.
Somehow they survived that.
Yeah,
the Samsung phones exploding in people's pockets.
Yeah, it was the Galaxy Notes. The batteries would explode.
Oh.
You know what? I'm actually now, as we discuss this, I'm more interested in the B plot. I want to see my two pet. Well, what are their names? I already forgot their names.
Antigans and the Silaeans.
Antigans and the Silaeans. I want to see them quabbling. I want to see them being petty. It's funny. That's the TOS energy. We should have had more screen time for their nonsense.
Of these two guys trying to fucking kill each other.
It was hilarious.
You know what? You're right.
I want to see that final scene that calls the ending.
And it's a shame that they, because DC Fontana wrote the story. She didn't write the screenplay, but she did do the, at least the story outline. And I wish that the actual screenwriter had found a way to balance the two plots better.
I want to see them put that guy in the pot. That would have made the episode 10 out of 10 for me.
Just Riker lifting up like the cover on a pot and just seeing a head and a little sighing. Like, it's just like, oh fuck, this is gonna be fucking terrible. He just sort of opens up a like Word document to send a message to Starfleet Command. It's like, how do I tell the diplomatic corps that there is Silaean soup? You know, I hope there's a journalist somewhere.
Just serve it. No one will notice.
Jeez. But we don't get that. Instead, we get malfunctions and an engineer we're never going to see again complaining about a short out.
R.I.P. Chief Singh.
Yeah, assistant Chief Singh.
I was like, that's like the first time I've seen like... Is it an East Asian, like, dark-skinned person in Star Trek? I feel like there's not that many.
There's a couple. There's Lieutenant Rada, who is assistant helmsman in TOS in a couple of episodes.
Played by a white woman, though.
Played by a browned up white woman. Yes, I forgot.
Okay, John, that doesn't count.
It doesn't count. But then there are actually Indian.
There are others. Yeah.
Others.
There's one in TOS actually. Now that I think about it.
Yeah, there's a couple. I think there's a couple of engineering staff who are.
But there's fewer elements of diversity. I don't know. For some reason, some races just get left out.
There's a court-martial panel where there's a South Asian.
Oh, yeah, the captain. Yeah, when Kirk gets court-martialed, one of the captains who's doing him in is Indian.
Yep.
I think it's fundamentally the fact that the background cast of the Star Trek series are based on who's available when a casting director walks into a bar in Pasadena and goes, you. And in the 60s, that was mainly ex-servicemen and Mexicans.
Right.
And in the 90s, it was a bit wider. And nowadays, it's just Canadians, which means you can get whoever.
So what happened with Enterprise? They were just...
Well, Canadians, I think they got rid of the union in Enterprise. They just hired white people who work in a union. But the advantage of being in Toronto is that Toronto is basically like having the world at your doorstep. So when you walk into the bar and go, you get four people who look entirely different. Which is nice, I guess.
Yeah.
But like... You look at how the casting is done for TOS, and it's quite simple. Even down to people like Sulu, it's literally like, oh, you were in some other shit recently. Do you want to come and talk to Gene? I promise he won't talk about sex.
Oh, what a terrifying notion. Do you want to come to talk to Gene? No, I don't.
Some of us don't.
Lord.
But,
I mean, and good for George Takei. Like, they let him go off and film that John Wayne movie while he was also doing Star Trek.
I forgot he was in a John Wayne movie. Was it any good?
I think for a certain generation, it's good. I doubt it's held up well because it's called The Green Berets and about Vietnam.
Oh, God, yes. No, I know. Yes, that's not a good film. No, now I realize I've watched it. It was also a Mission Impossible with Leonard Nimoy at the exact same time as... TOS.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, I need to watch that. I need to just watch everything Nimoy's in.
The best Leonard Nimoy property is the never picked up pilot for a show he did called Baffled. And in Baffled, Leonard Nimoy plays a race car driver who, after a crash, develops the gift of premonition for crimes.
I heard race so and he, I got scared.
So okay, he, so Leonard Nimoy, who has precognition for crimes, and this English journalist go to solve crimes together. And it's called Baffled, with a question mark.
This is incredible. I mean, that seems like...
It's on YouTube. It's a two-hour pilot. And it mainly consists of Leonard Nimoy womanizing.
Okay.
And then more importantly, being baffled.
Question mark.
Exclamation mark, actually. For that
oh, point. Exclamation mark.
Okay. Yeah, I think the show started with a question mark, and then when they did the pilot, they changed it to an exclamation mark.
True artistry.
Leonard Nimoy could have ended up becoming a Columbo kite, but Baffled sucked.
And I've always been, it's on my very long list of Trek-related things to watch, but Gene's previous series, The Lieutenant, had a lot of veterans, including Nimoy.
Lieutenant is very good.
Is it?
And The Lieutenant is good. It's much more overtly Gene Roddenberry tries to tell you about how society should be.
Yeah.
And it's really weird in the sense that you go through it and it's like, oh, that's Ricardo Montalban. That's Khan. It's like, oh, that's the Sherlock Cubs. Yeah, you know, that's just basically everyone and their mum who was in Star Trek just shows up.
Yeah, and it starred Gary Mitchell was the lead, wasn't he? Gary Lockwood.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
It is very clear that when he was making Star Trek, he just opened his address book and went, yes. Because there's the famous episode about race relations, which is it's very 60s in its form of race relations. But the black soldier in it is the guy, what's the name of the lieutenant in the Galileo 7 who hates Spock?
Boma?
Yeah, it's the guy who plays Boma. But yeah,
no,
Gene Roddenberry obviously had a book of people he liked.
Yeah.
And then had sex with one of them and married them. And probably had sex with another one. Anyway, less Gene, more aliens interfering with the ship. So the ship gets sabotaged and the warp's out, power's out, the subspace radio's out. And it's really funny because they're like, who could be sabotaging us? Like, well, we know the Ferengi have spies all over those planets. Maybe it was them trying to interfere with the E Federation. And it's like, wow, you guys are really trying to sell them.
They tried so hard that first season.
Yeah, to make them like Klingon-level villains. And it's the fucking Ferengi. So with all we know about it since, it's like, ah, the Ferengi could be interfering politically with us. And it's just the idea of like Quark trying to like Ollie North something. Like, sorry. Quark running guns to the Salaeans.
His cousin Gala would have.
Yeah. Are they talking? Is this.
Well, I like the. I'm not sure which novel it's in, but apparently in one of the Trek novels, Zek tried to make the Ferengi seem more badass and evil than they were, because he was scared of the Federation's moneyless expansion. So it was like a long con by Zek to preserve the Ferengi, but
that seems too smart for Zek, but I'll take it.
I know.
Yeah, we'll take it. Wesley's back, and the chief engineer Sig is a dick to him.
Oh yeah, I saw for the first time the Wesley knows everything, and it's kind of annoying thing. But it's not his fault. He's a smart little kid, old plucky kid.
It's worse in other episodes. I think the battle is probably the worst of the Wesley knows it all. Even though as much as I love the battle, because Patrick Stewart is so good actually. In it. Oh yeah, Data Lore too.
That's the origin of the iconic "Shut up, Wesley."
That's so mean to him.
It's a weird line. Just that it's such an odd moment as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, on moments we have
the beginning of Data as Sherlock, which I just love.
Yeah, because
that's so great.
Yeah, Sing gets a electrocuted and then yeeted across engineering. Which, sorry, buddy, that's what you get for only being introduced in this episode. And suddenly everything starts working again, except for the Antikans, who apparently were eating something for several hours.
Hilarious, amazing, 5 stars.
And then we get, as you say, Olivia, we get Sherlock Data with the pipe that is billowing smoke.
I just like that he's having a good time, okay?
My favorite Sherlock Data moment is when they're in Picard's ready room and he's got the magnifying glass and the pipe, and Picard's fish tank, something gurgles in it and it startles Data, and he holds up the magnifying glass to it like, I don't know why, but it always cracks me up.
It's adorable. Oh, should I enter my Data stan era? I'm gonna have to rewatch TNG. At what cost?
I do like this one though, because it's the best part is that Brent Spiner is quite clear that Brent Spiner's research for this was watching like the Rathbone serials for the 40s. Yep. So he's just doing an incredible impression of Basil Rathbone as Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, his accent work is so good.
And he's delivering all the lines like this. And it's, elementary, my dear Riker. Sure. And it's great. And he's like, well, obviously, there's no way that they could have been sabotaging because they were too busy trying to kill each other. And everyone's just like, oh, Data. That's a diplomatic act. That's a diplomatic incident currently occurring 5 decks below us, isn't there? And they just kind of... Yeah,
again, I wish that the two plots had somehow woven together a little better.
Yeah.
It was for the comedic effect of just not really seeing what's happening and then it just being like a strange annoyance to them.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Surely you care more about these two planets which keep trying to kill each other.
Yeah, like even if you... They kind of allowed a murder to happen on their ship. They really could have done more, if I'm being honest. They ignored it for a long time.
Yeah, they're just like, they don't care. They're just literally waiting to foist the whole problem onto whoever the diplomatic corps at Parliament. It's like, oh, by the way, these guys are trying to kill each other. Good luck, we're off. Leaving some poor diplomat to face the fact that these guys literally try to eat each other.
Well, and I want to know the steps of the security failures that led to the delegates eating each other. Like, that's not a good look for Tasha, as much as I like the character of Tasha Yar.
She just got fed up and let it happen 100%. You know what? One of you will die and that will... That works.
You see, Odo would have just gooed them so they wouldn't have done anything. He'd just...
Ew.
Odo would have been more efficient, I'll be frank.
Yeah.
But he probably would have broken the law. But
he makes the law.
So while Data's being Sherlock Holmes, Deanna hypnotizes Worf and Crusher. And
it's so embarrassing, that scene.
It's really bad, but then we find out that there's been some mind invasion. And it's not Troyza, which is a change from normal.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. See, it's a Troy win episode, okay?
Yeah, nothing bad happens. Well, she does get electrocuted at the end, but everyone does.
I was going to say everybody gets zapped, so...
Yeah, that's just camaraderie. It's great. Well, Picard gets zapped and becomes the creepiest person I've ever seen in my life. Picard smiles, the cadence. It's ruined Patrick Stewart's face for me, maybe just for the next 24 hours. But
Ted is the most annoying boss you've had.
Yeah, there was something in there.
The boss thinks he's cool.
and Patrick Stewart's clearly having fun playing a different character than this proto Picard.
Mm. Yeah, finally, I don't have to be so boring. You're particularly boring in season one, Picard. So, or does he get less boring?
In Picard,
he gets more.
Season three where he goes off with Vosh on Ryza, Captain's Holiday.
At least he gets laid.
I feel like Picard gets more less. He gets. They try and make him new. They try and make him less boring. They just make him less hornblower, which means he becomes more boring.
Yeah,
and then Picard is like, ooh, he's just a bumbling, look at this silly old man, ha, ha, ha. It's like, they make Picard gentle, and Picard is not a gentle person.
No.
Anyway, we're still due the all-star cast, the all-star I Quit Star Trek Picard, bit shit in it episode.
I can't wait. My frustration's been building for, what is it, months now, and I am ready to destroy the entire...
We booked two of the three guests because they asked like 3 months ago, 4 months ago to do it.
Who are the guests? Oh, wait, no, tell me after.
But it's coming, folks. It'll either come on the main feed or on the bonus feed if I feel like exploiting you for money. I will talk more about the existence of a bonus feed in the future. But for now, it'll happen. We Picard season two, bit shit in it, coming to a podcast near you. But you know what else is a bit shit? Picard just being a dick to everyone.
He does not carry the power to be that much of a dick. Like, I'm not going to take it from this weak little nerd.
But he doubles back. He wants to go back to the cloud. And everybody's like, why are you doing this? And he's like, fuck you, that's why.
I'd be like, let him go.
We get 30 seconds of Miles, who's just like, stop yelling at each other. And the Antiques and the Slayers are still being terrible. And then we immediately cut to Data going, what if we mutinied? Which is a very cursed, if only just for the awkward bouncing around of, what if we'd got rid of him? And also Geordi going, yeah, but if we did it wrong, there'd be buku trouble. Which,
what's that phrase?
Boku, it's French for a lot, beaucoup.
Yeah.
Oh. Saying it with a bad accent. it's like, remember, because Picard's French?
Oh, remember, wow.
They try so hard every once in a while to make you remember Picard's French.
Yeah, he drops some merde at some point in the first season.
Oh, what a curse combination.
He drops a couple of merdes in The Last Outpost.
Yep.
Which is a great episode until the Ferengi appear on screen.
Yes.
But apart from that, they never really engage a lot with the Picardist French thing. They should have just changed his name and made him from Yorkshire.
Well, why would you want to engage with the French, John?
That's
if you could avoid engaging with the French, you would too.
You know,
so that's
valid. That's a perfectly valid reason to change everything about a show, is just to avoid engaging with someone's Frenchness.
Yeah.
Is this now the scene where they all get electrocuted together?
Not yet. Okay. We're at the bit where Picard, where Riker and Crusher are like, we'd like you to do some medical tests. And Picard goes, no, I'd like you to do some medical tests, you dickheads.
I really am too busy for this nonsense.
Wait, how long has Riker been serving with Picard at this point?
A few months now. We're like two-thirds of the way through, halfway through the season.
Okay, so now that's
We're seven episodes.
That's fine. That makes sense. Because I was like, as soon as he said, no, you guys do the test, you should have known that he was fucked up. But if it's only been like a few months, fine. You don't know him that well yet. You're scared to lose your job. It's okay.
Yeah.
But Crusher has known him for decades at this point. So she should have known something was up.
And you've got the mind insights. No, not Crusher.
Yeah. Never mind. So then Riker gets like trapped by a Thalaean. Which, I mean, it's the thing is what you said, Jonathan's right, is that they don't know how to integrate these two plots properly.
Wait, they use like a glow stick lasso around him. Fabulous visuals.
Happy Pride Month. Oh wait, Pride Month's over. Happy Wrath Month.
I like the, sorry, wrong species.
Yeah, they're just...
They're polite. They're polite, you know? What Let nice them kill a few, a few opponents as a treat.
Yeah, everybody does it.
Yeah.
But then Kasha brings a test to Picard. It's like, are you going to look at them? He's like, no. And then she just immediately goes, is there another alien in you? And Picard goes, oh, yeah, absolutely. There's another alien in me. And we're going to have lots of fun together.
I hate it. Kill it with fire.
Yeah. So they get back to the cloud. Picard comes out on the bridge and goes, hi, everyone. I'm Jean-Luc Picard, and I have an alien in me. And we're going to go and live our happy companion lives together as energy beings. And there's nothing you can do about it. And my immediate thought was, people always do a Q Picard thing for being like Picard's gay, but we never talk about the fact that Picard tried to pair himself off with an energy being.
Was that a willing...
Lifelong companions.
Was that a willing interaction?
It's entirely unclear.
Okay, great. Great writing.
Like all writing of this kind in Star Trek, the vibe is indecipherable.
Brilliant.
You know, remember the Muse when Jake Sisko got groomed? And the vibe then was even still a bit iffy.
Oh, he gets groomed like at least two times in DS9. I don't know what they were doing.
So when everyone's like, we're not going to let you leave, he just electrocutes everyone. Which is really funny because it's still early on enough in this. They can't make the visual effects. They can't simulate it anyway for the actors. They are just doing really silly things. And
but do you notice, when they says... Who says this is blinding me? Someone says that, and then they cut to Geordi immediately, and I feel like it was on purpose, okay? I was like, what the hell was that?
The two things I noticed in the scene is right at the beginning, you watch a background character walk off the left side of the top of the bridge. So somebody went to the bar, that's the bathroom on the bridge.
Yep.
So one of them went and sat in the bathroom, and while they're in the bathroom, they got electrocuted.
This is what like, we want to see on
screen. What the fuck is happening? You haven't heard anything from the bridge, and suddenly you can't move. There's blue bolts flying up you.
I would never use the bathroom on the bridge. There's too much bullshit happening there every second.
I mean, and there's such a disconnect between the filming, the live action filming, and the visual effects departments, because you can see they use like a strobe light on the set. So that's what the actors were reacting to. And then the visual effects go with the, you know, the blue bolts of lightning, which look nothing like the strobe light effect.
Oh, there's a picture. Hold on.
So they had a little disco.
Oh, there's a picture. Look. This is an audio format, so you can just go on Memory Alpha and find the photo. But there's a photo of the effect before they added all the lightning.
Oh, God.
It looks so good. It's so weird. It's just like, can you see the person on the left there that's leaning back like that?
Yeah.
And so, oh,
but they wanted to be on camera and be visible that day.
Good for her.
Yeah. Yeah, good for them.
But so energy, super evil possessed Picard beams himself off the ship and into the energy soup. And it's like, well, we lost Picard. That sucks. I guess we got to go to Parliament. And Troy is useful because she's like, hang on. He's here.
Just in the nick of time. And he's actually fine.
Thing is that this whole sequence is silly.
I hate it.
But it's a very TOS level of silly.
Yes.
But it, it feels like it's usually like obscured more. Like, I don't understand the Star Trek nonsense anyway and all the fake science, but this one felt even to me like nonsense.
You like Spock's brain.
Spock's brain is
Spock's
brain, first of all, is cinema. It's what Orson Welles inspired to be. And everything. So don't come for Spock's brain.
I will Spock's brain is camp nonsense of the highest order.
There should be more camp nonsense to it, you know.
And it is proof of, I mean, you can see that Gene Kuhn wrote it, even though he wrote under a pseudonym because he'd been fired from the show at that point.
Why was he
fired? But you can tell it's, I can't remember if he had a falling out with Roddenberry and the network or what, but
I think it was the network more than Roddenberry.
Yeah, but he was still obligated to turn in like two more scripts under his contract, so he farted out Spock's brain. Well, I shouldn't say that because it's actually it's a solid script. It's just a completely nonsense. So
Spock's brain is objectively the result of someone who was spurned by.
Yes, by NBC.
Okay, this is really difficult for me to hear, but it doesn't change anything.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I like the bit where Picard gets into the ship and he does pee for Picard on the helm console. Because you could see them having TOS doing K for Kirk. I can see them doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone runs down to the transporter room.
Gosh.
And the same swell of music when he reintegrates himself and he's back and he's grumpy and he has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, he just goes, I guess this is getting to ending. He just goes off and takes a nap. What a shit ending. What was that?
I like it. It's peak Hornblowerism. It's Picard and Stewart getting that Picard is just properly Hornblower in his face in that he's a grumpy bastard.
Yeah.
He was like, what the fuck's going on? Who are you?
Soup, whatever it is. That's what
and I then we get the final tag of Yar runs in and it's like, oh my god, they ate each other. It's like, oh, that's right, this plot also happened.
Yeah.
And then they ended on the funny haha music when that happens.
Wah,
like
wah,
how TOS
would end. Dramatic incident.
Yeah.
I mean, the 50% of Star Trek is whatever they do to diplomacy is wah, wah, diplomatic incident. It's like, you know, a lot of Troyas, the Galileo 7, literally all of the trouble with Tribbles. Like the trouble was like, haha, they beat the Tribbles at the end. But it's also like, yeah, somewhere two diplomats have started a diplomatic incident that may escalate into a full-scale crisis over this. But we put the Tribbles in the Klingon stick in the Klingon engineering bay, so it's all fine.
And they won't stay there.
The Klingons will kill them all. So yeah, Lonely Among Us. So trivia-wise, in classic DC Fontana fashion, the original version of the script was made more interesting by her because while Michael Hal Perrin had a subplot involving dilithium, DC Fontana was like, you know what's better than dilithium? Diplomats. And she's right. Diplomats are more interesting than dilithium, which is why you should read The Edge of Midnight.
Cutting that
out. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks. Olivia, don't cut it out.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to hear about dilithium crystals. That would have made it significantly less interesting.
Yeah.
And wasn't Journey to Babel a part about dilithium crystals, really?
I mean, yes. It's all about mineral rights and sovereignty, and also deadbeat dads.
Hey, this one's got Worf.
Yeah, that's true. He's not a deadbeat dad yet, though.
Is that the son is alive somewhere?
No, I think the son is born between season 2 and season 4.
That makes it even worse. You were a Starfleet officer and you should have better morals.
He wasn't even a deadbeat dad yet.
No, I just like to dunk on Worf as a bad dad.
Yeah, he is the worst dad. We all know this. So, yeah. So the Antique and Soleil were designed by the iconic Andrew Probert. They broke the Gene Roddenberry golden rule of having makeup that involves full head masks, but they just went themselves.
Wait, so Gorn broke that rule as well?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. This is why, you know what, we should break all rules that Gene enforced.
Yeah, Gene had bad rules, I'll be quite honest with you. But yeah, apparently,
like the warp engines too were supposed to be nothing between the warp nacelles.
Yeah, which, I mean, it makes... you can get away with it. I think it's a sensible rule of thumb for ship design because it makes them look nicer.
Yeah.
But, so these snake heads were really heavy, and then they got rubber cast ones, but the background actors had to wear really terrible ones.
Oh, it's like shitty paper mache in the background, is that what you're saying?
No, well, they were really heavy, like... resin visual things. Effect. It's important that I show you, Olivia, the picture of the Salean cast.
I feel like this will not deter me. I feel
no.
Like...
This will. You will love this picture.
Oh my gosh! You know what? This is giving strong Doctor Who energy. You know.
Yeah, they do have that late, like late original Doctor Who energy.
Beautiful.
Yep, I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful costumes and the makeup is great.
Like so, a beatific vision.
Yeah. This is the second appearance of Colm Meaney. As he's not O'Brien yet. He's named in season two, but it's the first time he wears gold, which he'll wear for the rest of the time of the show. Are you ready for who else? Are you ready for whose first appearance on Star Trek this was, Olivia? Of Mark Alamo.
He was here?
He was the senior Antiquan delegate.
Fuck you. Where? Which one?
You know, the dog-like ones. He was the main one.
Oh, that's fine, because those guys were ugly. And if he was one of my precious lizard babies, then I would care. But that works out well, and that fits with my philosophy. So I'll allow it.
So he went uncredited because he wasn't sure how it was going to turn out. But according to him, it turned out to be fun.
Wait, what do you mean? He wants to be uncredited in case he hated it?
In case he sucked. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's not credited in the episode at all.
Fair enough, I guess. Season one of this weird space show.
So, yeah, this is the first time Data does a Sherlock Holmes thing. It's the first time the new pads appear. It's the first time the dress uniforms appear. It's the first time someone dies on the Enterprise.
Oh.
Yeah.
That took kind of long.
Yeah. But yeah, and apparently they got in trouble a bit for this episode for... doing a bit of cannibalism with the Antiquans eating the Salaeans. And as you said, Jonathan, both Okuda and Strick Sternbach were like, we shouldn't have used a transporter to rescue Picard. But they were like, it's okay, we can say the cloud made it possible. Which
I have more half-assed headcanons, so I'll take it.
Yeah. Did you have any extra trivia? I think you brought some, or did I cover most of the main points?
I don't know if they've changed it with these remastered versions that are on the streaming services and on Blu-ray, but I know in the TNG companion book written by Larry Nemechek, there's a scene where they couldn't get the actor that played Sing to do a reshoot, so they put a wig on a chair. And I watched this episode twice looking for it so I could point it out, and I couldn't see it, so I wonder if they found some rehearsal footage that they could replace it with, but...
They put a wig on a chair.
I wish we could have seen that.
If Nemechek said it happened, I have to believe it because his resources and knowledge is pretty deep.
Nemechek is very good at what he does, and I really want to have a long conversation with him one time. But that long conversation will mainly consist of me going, why, at him over his Star Trek, is the map he created, which is now just used for every map you see in Star Trek, and it's not actually a very good map.
Wow, and that's a Larry call out.
It does put too many systems too close together.
Yeah, and it doesn't really allow the universe to be that big, and it sort of puts everything too close.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he'll be at a con overseas before too long.
Well, they got rid of all the cons overseas. So.
I know. I have nothing to do with it, but I feel so bad for y'all.
Yeah, I'm sure we deserved it at some point. I'm sure we did something. The Empire, the existence of beans, letting Terry put his food pictures on the internet.
I'm going to blame Terry. I just feel like Paramount can no longer harm me. You know,
did we scare them off?
It's been 5 years of terribleness.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think what other things did I know other than the little hypnosis prop. I don't think we ever see again.
I would hope so, but yeah, that's Lonely Among Us, which is are we on 7 episodes into TNG? not shit. No. Like, considering how bad Code of Honor was,
oh god,
it never gets that bad again, I think.
Good for them. Voyager, take notes.
So, Olivia, we have to start with you and ask the important question. Are we quitting Star Trek?
I don't want to quit over this. You know, we've gone through so much worse times. I'll take that slight hope and say that was good. That was fine.
It was professionally fine. I agree with that. So I can't quit either. Jonathan.
I am not quitting. There was already certainly a worse episode before this one. The aforementioned racist piece of shit, Code of Honor, quoting Jonathan Frakes there. And the last 20 minutes of The Last Outpost.
Yeah.
No, this one isn't worth quitting over. There are certainly worse ones to quit over, but yeah, for as early in TNG's run as it is, it's perfectly fine.
I do hope somebody brings us The Last Outpost at some point, because I love The Last Outpost until the Ferengi appear. Yep. At which point I hate The Last Outpost. But the whole vibe of it with the ancient, like, Guardian Keeper and the Takon Empire, I love that.
Yep.
And, like, this whole idea of being right on the edge of the Federation, chasing them over the hill. But, yeah.
No, this one's not worth quitting over.
So the next important question is to rate this episode for triplets. Olivia, would you like to guide the audience and the uninitiated through the triplet scale?
The triplet scale is based on the brilliant episode from Enterprise, Unexpected, in which Trip finds himself with extra nipples due to an unplanned pregnancy. So if something's cursed, we're going to give it the maximum amount of triplets possible, 10. If it's just, you know, okay, it's not that interesting, you don't get any nips. It's a tragedy. But I think the key tragedy of this episode is that if we had got to see the dispute more, it could have had so many more trip nips. It would have been much funnier. We had a bit of absurdity, but this episode doesn't deserve trip nips right now.
So it's we're giving it the it's getting like one, two.
It can get three. I'm gonna give it three because
I think it deserves trip nips for the Worf face and snarl and the hypnotism scene.
I think, yeah.
Oh, the hypnotism scene was just awkward.
Yeah. Wheel settling on a three then?
Yeah. I'll toss one in for the I really am too busy for this kind of nonsense line.
That's a great line.
Yeah.
So that's what, three? Yeah, three and a bit. Three and a bit nipples. There's a weird one poking out the skin.
Yep.
And now we have our final guest depositor introduction, which is you have to present Olivia with a high art episode to join episodes like Spock's Brain.
Don't say it with your tone. Don't say it. Enjoying episodes of perfection like Spock's Brain or Arena or The Savage Curtain before it got racist.
Savage Curtain doesn't get racist. They just start browning Lincoln up.
They brown him up halfway through.
I was going to say, it hilarious. Gets racist like 2 minutes in.
No, it's like...
It's like 15 minutes in that he becomes darker than me for no reason. What,
is it like because he starts scrambling around in the ground? Is it
no, like John, old people are dark? Oh my God, it's insane. Watch it again.
I know, I believe you. I just don't know why.
I don't know why, because it would have been funny, and then they just do that.
And then there's no one left alive for Master Us.
I think what happened is they had to use the surplus budget for paint on something.
The union thing.
Anyway, avoiding tragedies like that. What is on your high art list that we can add to mine?
I have two from DS9 season one, and I'm having a hard time picking one. I should go with my first one, The Storyteller.
Which one's that?
So it's a diplomatic incident episode. I just remembered. The A plot is Miles and O'Brien and Bashir go to Bajor. I think O'Brien was supposed to help them with their irrigation system or something.
Is that the one where Miles becomes Moses?
Yes.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And then the B plot is Jake and Nog have a crush on a Bajoran girl about their age who's now suddenly the leader of her village.
Oh, no.
And they have a dispute with another village because the Cardassians rerouted a river during the occupation. And they get into what the writers thought were, you know, teenage hijinks.
Okay.
Terrorism.
Yeah.
Is Dukat in this episode?
I don't think so.
Miles does have to yell at a god. It's very funny.
Yes, and he's wearing a very Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments.
He's got a big Moses robe.
That sounds like higher potential. I don't know if I trust Jake and Nog crushing over some girl to be in the higher.
I think it's the same episode, yeah.
Little heavens. All right, we'll put it on the reserves. So wait, where's the cloak? Can I see the cloak?
Yeah, I was just going to pull that up.
Yeah. I think that's an important.
It all depends on the cloak now. This is all I'm going to confirm it on.
It's not quite Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, which would have been very good.
That would have been an even better reference.
It is a bit. It is actually a bit Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat.
It is, yeah.
Well, this is a picture of the cloak on someone else.
Yeah.
Because then they die and Miles becomes a storyteller. Right. This is what he looks like. This is what the cloak looks like.
Oh my god, that is Moses. Who is this?
Yeah.
For the drama of what is actually looking like a beautiful Renaissance painting, I'll allow it.
Yeah, I think the gentleman in that picture is the Cytherian from the episode where the Next Generation episode where Barclay gets his super brain.
Oh yeah.
The Nth Degree.
That's a whack episode. That's a high art episode.
Wow, the fact that you associate a whack episode with high art just shows me your true colors, you know? The most contentious part of this podcast, everyone. Anyway, I'm going to allow it. That looks like something I'd see in Portobello Market, vintage store, buying that. Great.
Yeah, that's a pride parade outfit.
Oh.
But that was great. Thank you so much, Jonathan. Have you got anything to plug to the listeners?
No, not at this time, unfortunately. Thank you all so much for having me on. This was a blast.
It was a pleasure. And if other listeners would like to come on the podcast and talk nonsense, which we love, you can drop us a message at Quit Star Trek Pod on Twitter or email us at iquitstartrek@gmail.com. You can buy our merch on our TeePublic store. All our proceeds go to the Trevor Project LGBTQ youth charity. And if you want to give us money instead of gay people, you can follow it. You can become one of our...
including gay people.
Yeah, if you want to give us specifically money, we are also gay, but if you want to give us money, now you can support us on Patreon at I Quit Star Trek on Patreon. The money from that goes towards supporting... our ability to do this, because I can no longer mooch off my university Zoom, but also, you know, a sense of pride and accomplishment for knowing you're buying me and Olivia beer sometimes. Which, and you know, there'll be bonus content. That's when we're going to do all the films. And I've said if we get to 50 subscribers, Olivia's going to watch MASH.
The only reason I don't want to watch MASH, I just want to clarify, is because it seems like it's going to be emotional and I don't want to be sad, okay?
Make you laugh, it'll make you cry.
I want to experience and the you'll highs want to only.
Be, you will want to be Klinger's friend. Olivia's going to love Klinger, I know this, folks. But
she's going to love Klinger and Radar.
Yeah, everyone loves Radar. So you got to get us to 50 subscribers, folks. But, you know, we're going to bring bonus content to you. Maybe we'll watch Battlestar Galactica. Maybe we'll do the films. Maybe we'll let Terry talk for an hour about comics. We don't know.
I'm guaranteeing a Gorn episode in which people will be ejected if they say anything even slightly pejorative about the Gorn.
Yeah, we might do a Gorn live stream. We'll do live streams. We're figuring it out. I made the Patreon like 3 hours ago. So, yeah. Thank you to the 4 people. Well, let me check.
Oh.
Let me refresh the page. Yeah, thank you to the 4 people who have already started sending us money, including Terry, Jonathan, thank you very much, and Patrick.
Patrick, who I'm actively fighting with as we record this.
This is what Patreon has become. It's become us shouting out people who send us money. And obviously, if you send us money, we are more likely to have you on the podcast just out of Catholic.
So this is now a bribe? We're corrupt. We're corrupt.
Olivia. Yes, we are. You know why we're bribed? We're being bribed. We're being bamboozled. You know, if somebody were to buy me a house or get me a good job, they could come on the podcast, obviously.
You're now, it's day one of having a Patreon and you're demanding a house and all these things.
I never promised to be incorruptible.
Unbelievable.
Who
we are now.
I mean, Olivia, if somebody bought you a house, would you not want them on the podcast?
Fine.
Exactly.
They buy me a house, I cut them off.
They
don't even get invited to the house.
That's how you get murdered in a Poirot story. But support us on Patreon. It'd be really cool if you did. But until then, thank you so much again, Jonathan. This has been a blast. But until next time, don't eat a delegate and cause a diplomatic incident. Not even if he's tasty.
I say do it.
Don't.
It's funny. If it's funny, don't make Tasha very sad.
Yeah, exactly. Don't make Tasha sad. Bye, everyone.